Hello, seafood friends. You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent, bringing you everything from the boats to the boardrooms, breaking down the news, spilling a little industry fish oil, and sharing the sharp market insights you need to know. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione.
Let's kick things off with a tariff update because we've got another twist here. Two new lawsuits have been filed in the U.S. Court of International Trade that are trying to block the Trump administration's brand new Section 301 tariffs that just kicked in on July 24th. Now, these tariffs replace the temporary Section 122 tariffs that importers had been paying for the last 5 months. The administration timed it so the Section 301 tariffs started at 12:01 a.m. on July 24th, the exact moment those temporary tariffs expired.
The tariffs keep on coming. One lawsuit was filed by companies including Learning Resources and Hand to Mind. The other was brought by spice importer Burlap and Barrel and watch retailer Collective Horology. They're basically saying the administration has tried for the third time to use a limited trade law to impose broad global tariffs. Normally, Section 301 is supposed to let the U.S. respond to unfair trade practices by a specific country, but in this case, the administration launched investigations covering 60 economies and ended up imposing almost blanket tariffs across nearly every major U.S. trading partner. The attorney representing one group of plaintiffs says Congress never intended Section 301 to become a worldwide taxing authority.
And if you're asking, haven't we seen courts strike down some of Trump's previous tariffs already? The answer is yes. Yes, we have. The International Emergency Economic Powers Act, or IEEPA, tariffs were invalidated, and the Section 122 tariffs also ran into legal trouble. Between those cases, the government has already had to refund at least $71 billion. Now, nearly 100 seafood companies have joined lawsuits seeking refunds for the tariffs they paid under IEEPA, plus interest. It's still unclear how much money seafood companies have actually gotten back.
The new Section 301 tariffs now hit seafood coming from most of the biggest suppliers to the U.S., including India, Vietnam, Indonesia, Thailand, Norway, Chile, South Korea, Japan, and the European Union. There's really only one narrow exemption for certain Ecuadorian tuna products. So for processors, distributors, importers, and food service companies, costs have gone up again, which means everyone is once again trying to figure out what rate applies to what product from which country.
Exactly. It's been months of navigating one tariff program after another, keeping track of different legal authorities, country-specific rates, exclusions, refund claims. It's become incredibly complicated.
So do these lawsuits have a real chance?
That's the million-dollar question, Lauren. So trade attorney Jessica Rifkin told Undercurrent that while another court challenge could absolutely reshape the tariff landscape, Section 301 rests on stronger legal footing than the administration's earlier tariff programs. The courts will ultimately decide whether the administration stretched Section 301 too far, but for now, importers should probably plan on these tariffs sticking around while the legal battle plays out.
Meanwhile, the markets are already starting to react. Almost immediately after the Section 301 tariffs took effect, farmgate shrimp prices in India started climbing. Going into this, there was a lot of concern that India might once again end up in a tariff disadvantage compared to Ecuador or other Latin American producers. Remember last summer? India was hit with much higher duties for a period of time, which really hurt its competitiveness in the U.S. market. But that's not what happened this time. The new tariff structure puts India and Ecuador on essentially the same footing for exports to the U.S.
Farmers are finally getting better prices, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're making more money because feed costs continue to climb. Processors in India say fish meal prices remain a major concern, and there are even discussions with the government about reducing taxes on feed ingredients to help offset those higher costs. So while shrimp prices are moving in the right direction, producers are still feeling pressure from rising production costs.
If you want more insight into what's going on with the shrimp market, we've got links to Undercurrent's latest coverage in our show notes.
But moving back into the policy news, because this was another head turner this week, a bipartisan group of senators has urged the Trump administration to take much stronger action against China's distant water fishing fleet. So Ted Cruz from Texas, Dan Sullivan from Alaska, Chris Coons from Delaware, and Andy Kim from New Jersey are just a few of the names who signed a letter asking Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent to impose sanctions on 29 additional Chinese vessels that lawmakers say are connected to illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, also known as IUU fishing, as well as alleged forced labor. But they're not just targeting fishing boats, they're going after the support network. We're talking about the refrigerated cargo ships, the fuel tankers, and the floating supply vessels that keep China's distant water fleet operating for months at sea without needing to come back to port. So the senators argue that if you really want to disrupt the fleet, you don't just target the fishing vessels, you target the logistics network that makes the whole operation possible.
The letter also paints a pretty staggering picture of the scale involved. The senators say China's distant water fleet could number anywhere from around 2,000 to as many as 16,000 vessels.
It's a pretty wide range.
Yes, it is. They also cite data saying the fleet accounted for roughly 44% of global fishing activity between 2022 and 2024, operating in the waters of about 90 different countries. So, very serious allegations, and they're why the senators want these vessels added to the Treasury Department's sanctions list.
But then this story takes another twist. Just one day after the letter was sent, Punchbowl News reported that roughly $170 million Congress had approved to improve maritime surveillance and help counter China's illegal fishing fleet had largely been redirected by the Department of Homeland Security. So instead of going towards maritime enforcement, much of that money that had been earmarked to fight China's IUU fishing was reportedly used for security preparations ahead of the 2026 FIFA World Cup and America's 250th anniversary celebrations, which is, of course, not what lawmakers expected when they approved the funding.
Not at all. So, in fact, Senator Ted Cruz, who helped secure that funding, told Punchbowl that unfortunately the bulk of the money, quote, has not gone where it needed to go. Of course, he did not confirm that it went to the World Cup security, but he is doubling down on calls for tougher sanctions, and that full story is in the show notes. And in other US government funding news, and this is on a more positive note, thankfully. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced recently that it plans to purchase $76.5 million worth of food products under its Section 32 purchasing authority, and seafood is a big part of that. The purchases include $5 million worth of Atlantic groundfish and $20 million worth of farm-raised catfish.
Much of it will be distributed through federal nutrition assistance programs, including food banks participating in the Emergency Food Assistance Program. But the catfish purchase is especially interesting because producers have been asking USDA for more support. Just a few weeks ago, a group of Republican senators from major catfish producing states urged USDA Secretary Brooke Rollins to purchase surplus catfish to help farmers dealing with rising costs and financial pressure. That letter was signed by senators from Mississippi, Alabama, and Arkansas, who argue that Section 32 purchases could provide some much needed cash flow for producers.
And the USDA has been active in the catfish market already this year. The agency has purchased about 192,000 pounds of catfish products so far in 2026, including unbreaded raw fillets and breaded oven-ready strips. That contract was awarded to Consolidated Catfish, which supplied the entire order. As for groundfish, USDA hasn't said exactly which Atlantic groundfish species will be included in the upcoming purchase. But previous purchases have included products like haddock, Atlantic pollock, and ocean perch. Earlier this year, USDA purchased frozen haddock fillets from Pure Fish Company in Massachusetts.
So there's a lot happening on the seafood procurement side. And there's even more potentially coming because the USDA has also said a few weeks ago that it is planning to move towards adding US wild-caught peeled and deveined shrimp back onto the list of seafood available for purchase under the Emergency Food Assistance Program. So a big deal for the domestic shrimp industry. USDA last purchased wild-caught peeled and deveined shrimp for federal nutrition programs in 2025 and had previously been included on the list in fiscal years 2023 and 2024, but was left off that list in 2026. Now, the agency says deliveries of shrimp could begin as early as January 2027, although a formal solicitation has not yet been released.
Did someone say shrimp?
Undercurrent price analyst Gary Morrison, always ready to join the pod. But we don't want to talk about shrimp, my friend.
No, we don't. It's time to get crabby. Pasteurized blue swimming crab meat rose steeply in price to record levels in week 31 in Undercurrent's U.S. wholesale price platform. U.S. bans on blue swimming crab meat exported by key sourcing nations have jolted UCN's crab assessment upward in recent months. While the Philippines hopes to regain permission to export to the U.S. by the end of 2026, its exclusion under a crackdown in enforcement of the Marine Mammal Protection Act has choked supply. Venezuelan product has also been banned under MMPA restrictions. And let's not forget about Mexico's conservation period in May and June, where production started ramping up in mid-July. So, Gary, is this one of the tightest supply situations the industry has seen in recent years?
It is, Lauren. This is one of the tightest supply bottlenecks in years and probably in history. Over the last 5 years, the total imports from the Philippines and Venezuela, the two countries currently banned, accounted for 21% of total crab meat imports. Imagine taking one-fifth of anything off the market right away, and it's going to have a severe supply side consequent and drive prices higher. And now add a smaller but important market in Mexico, which is about 2-3% of imports to the United States. And that usually helps for inventory flow during the conservation periods in Venezuela to help mitigate some of the volatility. And you can see the impact of some of these policies.
Now, Gary, are we seeing demand destruction because crab meat has become a a luxury protein item, or are buyers continuing to absorb the higher prices?
So I think once you get into that luxury threshold, commodities and proteins start doing well, right? So we're not seeing any demand destruction yet. The market remains really hot, and there are no signs that it's coming to an end anytime soon. Supply risk became the primary concern early in the summer as buyers positioned themselves for the peak demand period, knowing that some of these main markets were going to be excluded. And as Indonesian product went, so did the market. Beef prices rose significantly as competition for limited raw materials was fierce. This led to higher origin costs that were quickly passed on to the U.S. importer, but it didn't stop them from moving product to their customer as soon as it hit the water.
So when buyers are saying they are operating hand to mouth, what does that actually look like in practice? Are they reducing inventory levels? Are they changing menus, looking for alternatives?
Yeah, so it means they're working with thinner and shorter inventories. Maybe they buy for 1 to 2 weeks of needs instead of 3 to 4 that they typically would. Think just-in-time inventory, Lauren and Amanda. This is starting to happen a little bit as some importers tell me they believe Venezuelan officials have applied for compatibility approval from NOAA and that NOAA has responded back with a list of questions. I know we've been trying to get comment from industry's trade group NFI to the validity of this development. But even so, if this is true, it will take some time to get product flowing back into the market, but that product will be welcomed with open arms. But as a result of this belief, US importers just want to get through the summer and then they're a little bit more cautious as the fall rolls around.
So, if you're looking for trusted, independent seafood market intelligence, be sure to check out Undercurrent. Beyond our daily journalism, we provide industry-leading price reporting, market analysis, and data across all major seafood species from origin to wholesale. Our latest platform enhancement introduces powerful U.S. customs data tools to our global trade portal, allowing subscribers to identify the top importers of major seafood species and gain deeper insight into the import trends and market dynamics. Combined with our trusted news coverage and benchmark pricing, Undercurrent gives businesses the intelligence they need to make more informed buying and selling decisions. To learn more or request a demo, visit undercurrentnews.com.
Thanks for hopping on, Gary.
No problem, Amanda. Just continuing to warm up for when I replace Lauren in a few weeks.
Wait, what?
Oh, have I not told you, Lauren? Gary and UCN EMEA Deputy Editor Dan Gibson and I are going to Thailand in September for the Global Seafood Alliance's Responsible Seafood Summit. So I'll be recording with them that week instead of you.
Well, enjoy your jet lag.
If you'll be in Thailand for GSA's Responsible Seafood Summit and want to connect over some pad Thai, please reach out.
Well, the FOMO is real. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you back here next week.
Bye-bye.